This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
Lego.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Broncos look like they may pressure this a bit.
They block it. The ball's bouncing around.
From the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Intercepted. Dondre Tillman on the rebound.
And that is a Denver touchdown. Troy Franklin.
My answer were to you, I'm comfortable. That'd be silly.
Earlier on the show, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero. Still to come. MLB insider Jeff Passan. Actor Woody Harrelson. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Our number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Tom Pelissero. We just said goodbye to him. We'll say hello to Woody Harrelson in about an hour. It's in What's More Likely Friday. There's you at 844-204-RICH. Number to dial, Disney Plus, ESPN is how you can watch us, and you can listen to us, as always, on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance or Sirius XM Channel 80, or wait whenever you want to listen to us whenever you want on our podcast. It's your right. Joining us now, we haven't spoken to him in a while. He's one of our favorites. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best in the business, talking baseball for the worldwide leader. It's Jeff Passan back on the program. Good to see you, Jeff. How are you?
This is my first time on since you've come back home, isn't it?
I think it might be. I don't know. It might be. It could be. It is. Listen, Jeff, my first question for you. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being ecstatic and 10 being out of their skulls ecstatic, Major League Baseball is what after this World Series, Jeff Passan?
I'd say probably an 8.
Okay.
Yeah, how can you be anything but ecstatic after that World Series? Right. It was just, it was the culmination, Rich, of an October that to me illustrated and displayed everything that's great about baseball right now. You had stars performing at historically great levels. You had individual and team performances that were beyond expectations. And you had more series than ever go the distance, including the World Series, which I've covered 22 of them now, I believe. And it's hard to say that any of them have been better than this one. Now, I was still in college back in 2001, and certainly that one gives 2025 a run for its money in terms of this century. And my first World Series was 2004. Historically, that was a big deal. 2016 had an awesome Game 7, and the outcome with the Cubs winning for the first time in more than a century was great. But just in terms of, like, pure baseball and the things that happened in the series and the quality of the games and the players who were involved, it's really tough to beat this year between Los Angeles and Toronto.
Yeah, and at one point I think I posted out, Jeff, that this World Series ran out of things I'd never seen before. and there's two moments that will live, I think, in nightmare fuel for Blue Jays fans until they get a chance to win it again and actually pull it off. I kind of want to pick your brain on the backstories of it or what people are talking about it. And the first one was that moment in Game 6 when Barger hits the ball in the talk about game of inches. It wedges in between the bottom of the padding and the warning track. And there's a lot of talk about how this should not have been a dead ball. This should have been everybody keeps running. And instead, this was improperly called a ground rule double and dead baseball. What's the scoop here on that, Jeff?
I think it was the right call. I mean, you saw that photo. If you guys can bring that back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at the way that the fence has moved. There's a little indentation at the bottom, and part of it has been pushed up. And was it wedged to the point where Justin Dean could not have reached in, grabbed it, pulled it out, and thrown it back? No, it turns out. But I don't think John Tompain, who is the umpire in left field, could make that determination from his position. What he saw was a ball that looked like it could be stuck there. And in the moment, you have to make a judgment call. And the judgment call that he made there was that it was a dead ball and that it was an automatic two bases for Addison Barger. And it's, you know, you talk about game of inches with football. Baseball feels like a game of millimeters, man, because in addition to that, in the ninth inning, bottom of the ninth, in game seven, the difference between Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's foot hitting the plate and that one spike on the bottom of Will Smith's shoe going down and touching the plate. I mean, it was, yeah, you see it right there. Like one spike. That is the difference between the Los Angeles Dodgers remaining alive and eventually winning the World Series and the Toronto Blue Jays walking it off and being World Series champions for the first time since 1993.
And Major League Baseball being the first major sport in this 21st century of instant replay awarding
a championship decided on a reversal
of a call of an umpire. That was in the ether as it was going down. And that's the second play I was going to bring up to you, Jeff. What is the backstory behind Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's lead off of third base? There's so much talk about there wasn't any secondary lead and why he wasn't taking it, and then we all know his decision to slide foot first, not head first, not run through the plate when it was a force play, not a tag play. Jeff, what's the backstory that you heard about that one?
There are a few different elements that we have to talk about here, Rich, and I think it actually goes back to game six and goes back to Addison Barger being on second base, and a line drive gets hit out to left field. Kike Hernandez charges it. Barger makes a bad read, gets too far off the bag, and gets doubled off to end the game. And I think that sort of thing informs just how conservative the Blue Jays were when it came to the ninth inning of the next game. And Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is on third, bases are loaded, and Max Muncy is a couple of steps off the bag. Now, typically speaking, hitters are told to take a lead about equivalent to the distance between the third baseman and the bag, with the idea being that if a line drive gets hit to third base and the third baseman snags it, you do not want to be further away from the bag and run the risk of getting doubled off. Now, Dalton Varsho was at the plate. Dalton Varsho does not hit the ball to the opposite field. Doesn't matter where it's pitched. And so that wasn't quite as big a concern, but Carlos Fables, the third base coach for the Blue Jays, walked to the line and put his right foot down and pulled it back while still on the ground, essentially saying to Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, this is where you need to end your lead. And it was not as far as Max Muncy. They were playing very conservative at that point. But beyond just the potential for a double play is the potential for a back pick, too. If you take a larger secondary lead, Will Smith could theoretically throw behind and try and pick him off at third base. That being said, the lead is as egregiously small as it was. That's not the issue. It's the slide. But guys play on instinct, Rich. And your instinct from all of the reps that you've had throughout your career is going to be to slide into home plate and not to run through. So the question of should he have slid head first as opposed to feet first, that's reasonable. I get that. But man, it's just such a hard thing in the moment. And yet those very minuscule decisions that are made in the moment are the differences between a championship and an absolutely heartbreaking loss.
And then, you know, you want to talk instinct, Jeff Passan, Dave Roberts' instinct. My goodness, his spidey sense in game six and seven in particular were off the charts. Why did he decide in the middle of the ninth inning with Yamamoto on the mound to insert Andy Páez into center field? Because after this IKF play came the moment that I will never forget. Kike Hernandez will never forget. Dodger fans will never forget. Why was Páez inserted when he was?
Before I answer that question, yes. Did you know that Kike Hernandez, when he was laying face down on the warning track afterward, do you know why he was face down like that?
Go for it.
He thought that the ball had fallen, and he thought that the World Series was over. And Páez said to him, what are you doing? And Kike said to him, we lost. And Páez was like, No, it didn't.
Isn't that great? Unbelievable.
We did not. The answer is because with one out and the potential for a sacrifice fly to end the World Series, Dave Roberts understood that he needed his strongest armed outfielders out there. And so that's why Andy Pages, who has a tremendous arm, came in, because and they were playing relatively shallow, right?
Yes.
So that's why you saw when they were going back the way that they did, why that Ernie Clement drive to the left center field gap was as tenuous as it was. It's knowing your personnel, and it's understanding that every little maneuver that you make can add a minuscule sliver to your win probability. And in this case, the minuscule sliver turned out to be an absolutely enormous, enormous boon to the Dodgers championship hopes.
So you're saying he was brought in for the possibility of throwing someone out for a second out that was IKF anyway,
and he just happened to be in the game for the third out.
He was just in
this. This would have been throwing him out. So let's say with one out, that instead of Dalton Varsho hitting a ground ball to Miguel Rojas and Rojas corralling it and throwing home to get IKF, let's say Varsho hits a fly ball to center field. You're going to have a play at home plate then. It's going to be a different play. That play at home plate was a force play, but if you have a fly out before that, then you're going to have a tag play at the plate, and you'd better have a perfect throw home if you're going to get Kiner Falefa.
Ah, so an 8-2 World Series
correct
saving out, as opposed to a 7-4 double play that forces a game 7 on a broken bat to walk it off. Like, again, this World Series, brother, unbelievable. And the fact that Rojas was in it
awesome
all. In it all, right? I mean, in that pick play.
And he was, in, Rich.
Right.
He was in because Andy Pages can't hit.
I do.
Like, Pages had been in the lineup games 1-5 in pretty much every other game. And the Dodgers' versatility is what helped them here, because Tommy Edman, who they had kept out of center field because of a lingering health issue, they were like, you know what, lingering health issue or not, we cannot have Pages' bat in the lineup anymore. And that's precisely why Pages was on the bench, available to come into center field.
All right, Jeff Passan. So what's next for the Dodgers to three-peat? What rostering is first up, first order, anything? Or they're going to be able to run it back? What do you got for me, Jeff?
They never run it back. They always are looking to add. And the scary part, I think, for fans of anyone other than the Dodgers right now, is not only are they returning Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow and Shohei Ohtani to their rotation, not only do they still have Emmett Sheehan and Justin Wroblewski and Roki Sasaki, who, by the way, is still going to be a starting pitcher, River Ryan coming back from major surgery, Gavin Stone coming back from major surgery. And what this allows is for the Dodgers, between that and their surplus of minor league outfielders, to go out and make a trade and try and get a big chip from somewhere. I don't know if that's a closer. I don't know if that's an outfielder, but those are the two obvious places that they need to address. I do not think they're going to be heavy in on Kyle Tucker in free agency. I think that he's the sort of guy who they might approach in a similar tack to what they did with Bryce Harper, half a decade back. Like, hey, we'll give you a very high number on a shorter number of years. But Kyle Tucker, because of his age, because he understands this is his big bite at the apple, is much likelier to seek out, say, a 10-year deal or 11 or 12 years, one of the not quite Juan Soto level, but a contract of that ilk, more than a shorter term, higher average annual value deal like the Dodgers would want.
Okay, because I was waiting for you to say this fellow Murakama, who's been posted today, he'll just be the latest guy from Japan who wants to play for the Dodgers, willing to defer everything to 2042. You know what I mean?
Maybe he wants to. Where does he fit? The Dodgers just picked up Max Muncy's option. Murakami plays third base. The Dodgers have Freddie Freeman at first base. He's not going anywhere. And they have Shohei Ohtani at DH. Murakami's probably not athletic enough to be an outfielder. He's
okay.
Much likelier to be an infielder. So I don't know that the fit is there. But then again, if he wants to sign for below market value just because he wants to go to the Dodgers, then
get out of here. There's a team in New England, Jeff, that has a hole at third base.
Well,
now,
Yankees so. Too, man. You gotta be kidding me. The Yankees have a massive glaring hole at third base that I thought they were going to fill with the guy you filled it with last year and Alex Bregman just opted out.
Now you can get him.
So I botched the fella's name, Murakami.
Munetaka Murakami.
Tell us about him, please. Tell us about him.
At 22 years old, Rich, he set the single season record in Nippon Professional Baseball for home runs hit by a Japanese-born player, breaking a record that Sadaharu Oh had owned since 1964. Murakami has enormous power, the kind of power that that dynasties have been built upon. And yet he's got a glaring flaw in that he swings and misses a lot.
Oh,
and
perfect
he strikes
Yankee.
Out a lot.
That's a perfect Yankee. I mean, honestly, like Cashman's probably going all the way over there to personally, you know, bring him over on the Steinbrenner jet. That sounds like a perfect Yankee, Jeff. Perfect.
It's really interesting to me, Rich. I'm curious to see how this offseason players who have extreme bat-to-ball skills are valued by the industry, considering that the Toronto Blue Jays made the World Series
right.
in large part because of their ability to put the bat on the ball.
You bet.
And as a baseball fan, as someone who my whole life I have just adored this game, man, I loved watching the Blue Jays play. What a yep. fun team to watch, not just because of the bat-to-ball, but because they were able to combine that with superior slug as well. It shows the two are not mutually exclusive. If you're hitting the ball, you don't have to hit it soft. You can have your cake and eat it too. And on top of that, the defense that the Blue Jays played, like, they were just a really fundamentally sound team. And Bo Bichette's return, I think, did him a great service going into free agency this offseason, knowing that he is not at 100% by any means. His knee was messed up. He was out for 7 weeks, and he came back and essentially looked like he hadn't lost a step, playing a position that he hadn't played since when he was in the minor leagues. I mean, it was just a phenomenal performance by him. And his free agency, among Tucker and Framber Valdez and Dylan Cease and Pete Alonso, there are a lot of big names, Alex Bregman. Like, it's going to be a really interesting winter in terms of free agents and seeing where they land. And Bo Bichette, to me, is near the top of the list of those interesting players, because our team's going to want him as a shortstop, where he was below average defensively last season. Are they going to move him to second or third base? What does a guy like him, his value is best tied to his ability to hit for average, right? Mm-hmm. And batting average is just not something, generally speaking, that's valued at a high level in Major League Baseball. And yet Bichette's also got slug. He doesn't strike out. There's more to it than batting average, but that's one of those components. It's going to be nice to see it get paid this offseason, because I think batting average does still matter.
Of course it does. I'm with you. They were a fun team to watch. You're right, the Blue Jays. So in the few minutes I have left with you here, as we're off and running on the hot stove, the four-letter word in many front offices, Boris, how is he looming and his clients looming, whether they're free agents or not, Jeff, over the next few weeks?
Well, I think it's going to be the next few months Rich, you're used to normal free agency where everything happens in the NFL at one time.
Yes.
Like, I was getting tweets yesterday, like, announce a signing. I was like, you guys don't understand how baseball works, do you? Like, it's going to be a little while until we get the big signings. But Scott Boras, as in every year, has a pretty impressive roster. Alex Bregman, Pete Alonso, a Japanese pitcher named Tatsuya Imai, who you should keep an eye on.
Okay.
Because Imai is really interesting to me in that he looks like a Yoshinobu Yamamoto starter kid. They are the same size at 5'11", and yet they both throw gas, you know, topping out at 99 or so. Imai's breaking stuff is very good. He doesn't throw a splitter quite as much as Yamamoto doesn't rely on that, but he has been healthy. He has put up phenomenal numbers in NPB, and he's going to be another guy who's going to be a $100+ million pitcher. And it's going to be really interesting to me to see what the market for Japanese players, from Murakami to Amai, Kazuma Okamoto, like, there's some real guys who could be coming over this winter, and the market for them is going to be super interesting to me because, you know, all the consternation about the Dodgers and the dynasty that they've built, there are organizations out there and owners especially who just want to chip away at what the Dodgers have. And the Dodgers' advantage in Japan right now is enormous to the point where we're joking, all of them are going to go and sign with the Dodgers at this point. Right. And yet, you know that there are owners right now going to their general managers and saying, we need someone from Japan on this team right now, if only so we can get into this marketplace for down the road when players, you know, more players come over that were in consideration. And sometimes geographical elements factor in heavily. You know, a lot of guys want to stay on the West Coast because of the much shorter flight back home to Japan. Other guys want to go to New York because New York's New York. And it's, you know, you can't argue with that. And yet I think we're going to see some surprising teams this winter in on Japanese players, just trying to get a foothold in that place that has produced as much talent as it has over the last half decade, especially.
Yeah, good luck with multiple MVP in Ohtani and the reigning World Series MVP in Yamamoto, saying to anybody, hey, why don't you come here? We're all comfortable. We're all having a good time. What about Skubal? I know, you know, the Tigers would love to re-sign him, and you're hearing money that's definitely usually not very Tiger-like. What about that? How does that loom over anything, Jeff?
Not only would the Tigers like to re-sign Tarek Skubal, Tarek Skubal would like to stay in Detroit, too. He really likes it there. He loves A.J. Hinch. Chris Fetter and Robin Lund, the pitching coaches there, are excellent. And they're the organization that not only took a chance on him, but helped him turn into the best pitcher in the world. And yet, Tarek Skubal's a free agent after this season in 2026. Mm-hmm. And he is going to command, as long as he stays healthy, more money than any pitcher in baseball history. Right now, the number is $325 million for Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Skubal is primed to absolutely smash that. And if he's not going to agree to a long-term contract with the Tigers, and generally speaking, Scott Boras clients don't sign extensions, especially this close to free agency. There are exceptions, but by and large, that's the case. If you're the Tigers, you have to ask yourself the question, if we're losing him at the end of this season and all we're going to get out of it is a draft pick, then is it worth it potentially to consider trading him? Now, where the Tigers are at in their aspirations, both in 2026 and going forward, it makes sense for them to move him. And yet, trading a guy of that ilk is a really, really hard thing to do. As much sense as it might make from a long-term perspective, there are psychological elements that are involved with the fan base and with the organization and with the players in your clubhouse where it's like, if we're going to move this guy, then what are we doing? What's the point? This is the person around whom you build to go and win World Series. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me that we're going to get rid of him after two consecutive years of postseason appearances? It seems like a silly thing to do. It seems like a frivolous thing to do. And that's the issue right now in Major League Baseball. It's how many teams, Rich, if they were in this similar position, would have the same thoughts that the Tigers are having right now. And the number, frankly, it's too high. It's unfortunate. And that's why there is so much consternation among fans when it comes to the economic system in Major League Baseball. If you feel like the best thing for you to do, and not only if you feel like that, but if numbers and models tell you that the best thing for you to do is to get rid of the star player that you drafted, that you developed, that you helped turn into this monster that he is right now, what does that say about the sport?
Yeah. And then this will be for another time. Why make a deal if you're Schuble or the Tigers if the collective bargaining agreement's elapsing and the rules can be completely changed and you have no idea how this contract fits into the future of the sport?
That's right? A fair thing. I mean, I'm just operating, Rich, under the idea that the economic system is not going to change demonstrably to the point that it would have any ill effect on the future of the Tigers. But perhaps I'm just operating that way because I'm trying to be optimistic amid the labor strife that's happening right now. And that's going to be the story of the 2026 season, because the collective bargaining agreement is up December 1st, 2026. Everybody in the industry is anticipating a lockout, a lockout in and of itself. Not a great thing, not a terrible thing. It's when a lockout starts bleeding into the next year and games are potentially missed that it turns tremendously problematic. We haven't seen games missed in Major League Baseball, Rich, in 30 plus years at this point. And as somebody who adores the game, I'm hoping that we don't see that streak ended.
Certainly off a World Series that everybody is talking about and everybody watched in two different countries, or three, obviously, include Japan. Jeff,
50 million plus people, man. Like,
isn't that amazing?
Those are real numbers.
Yes, they are.
Those are really impressive.
Jeff, you're the best, man. Thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Keep looking for more of my texts and calls, and thank you. Appreciate it.
Can't wait, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Passan right here on the Rich Eisen Show. We spoke longer than we thought, but it's just too terrific talking to Jeff.
Well, he confirmed more economies coming to the Mets, which I love.
I did not know that. I didn't know that either. Yeah. Oh, okay. When we come back, what's more likely, everybody? As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more.
As you know, managing maintenance, repair, and operations is never easy. But for the ones who always rise to the challenge, Grainger has your back. From professional-grade products you can count on to fast, dependable delivery, they're there to help you keep things running smoothly. Plus, their technical product specialists are here to help answer your toughest questions. And because Grainger knows safety is always a priority, they're committed to being your partner in protecting both your people and your facilities. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
Back here on our simulcast, Disney Plus and ESPN and ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive is proud to support veterans and small businesses with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program, helping our heroes drive their lives forward. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. All right. We just had a long chat with Jeff Passan. Dodgers just, you know, he says, run it back or acquire more and get some young players that they have in the pipeline that were hurt back, and good luck. Good luck.
Yeah. Ay, ay,
ay. Otani's winning MVP.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, bro.
Yamamoto is the World Series MVP. Yeah.
He is. Okay. Yeah.
Anybody from Japan want to come join?
I'm the death row.
So.
Dodgers are favorite for the World Series next year.
Oh, imagine that.
Plus 350.
Imagine and again, if there's going to be some sort of new monetary setup and how the league is run, why would you make a deal right now? But there's a lot of free agents available, and we'll keep an eye on it. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We'll take your phone calls in a moment, but it's a Friday, which means it's time for What's More Likely? Hit it.
What?
What's More Likely?
Never say never, but never.
What's up, everybody? Happy Friday.
All right, everybody.
What up, though?
Hey, maybe the marquee game on Sunday goes down in Tampa. Patriots, Bucks. Who's more likely to win a playoff game this year? New England, Tampa Bay.
I'll go Tampa because I think they're going to host one. At some point, you're going to have to lose a football game, Chris, and at that point, the Bills will catch up. 15-2. That's what you're going to go? You're going to win 14 games in a row? Is that what you're going to do?
I mean, the Patriots have done that before.
Okay.
So.
All right. Yeah, I'll go Buccaneers.
They're not a healthy team.
I am aware of that.
Okay.
But you're talking about a playoff game, right?
Wait, Bucky Irving may never play football again at this rate. So.
Is that a fantasy complaint or is that...
yes.
Or is that... Okay, got it.
Very much so.
Okay. Well, I would leave that emotion out of it.
Okay.
And just say that right now, the Patriots are a half game in front of a team that I think is way better than the team that is two games behind the Buccaneers right now.
That's true.
Or 1.5 games behind the Buccaneers right now and 2 in the loss. So the second place team is Carolina in the South. The Bills are the second place team in the AFC East, closer to the Patriots than the Panthers are to the Bucks. Do the math, which team is more likely to finish as a division winner and have a home playoff game? I would go with the Bucks right now.
I think the Pats could go on the road anywhere.
Okay. Just because you don't like the answer doesn't mean you
but
can't move on.
You've been wrong about New England every step of the way this year, so I'm just pushing back.
I understand that. During the Broncos' dreadful win last night, you're blowing me up on a text with Smitch like you're in my comments on YouTube.
Thought you didn't read those.
Well, the Broncos at 3 in your power rankings looks a little silly today, you know?
It didn't age well so far, but they won, though. They're 8-2. I'm looking at the standings right now. They're the one seed going into the rest of week 10, and I don't see any photographs on it either.
Broncos, 4:00, wild card weekend, Saturday, book it.
What else you got?
Great game going on between the Rams and 49ers this week. NFC West superstars to have more total yards, Puka and Devontae Adams combined, or Christian McCaffrey?
Oh, I'll go two receivers over a guy who is accounting for half of their offense. Yeah, I'll go Puka and Devontae combined. That's what I shall do.
That's a monster fantasy.
I can't
game.
Wait for
so
it.
So many players in this
I can't
game.
Wait for it. And Puka is a full participant in practice.
Yeah, he's ready to go.
Saying he's ready to go. So that's good to know.
Fourth window of football on Sunday as well. Should be a fun international game. Stud running back to have more rushing yards and touchdowns. Bijan or Jonathan Taylor?
I will go Jonathan Taylor.
Bounce back.
I am aware of that. And one of them is been more consistent since week one. And so is the team. I will take the Indianapolis Colts in Berlin, and I will take the guy who, prior to last week, I thought was the front runner for MVP in the National Football League, and Jonathan Taylor having the bounce back game, sir. That's what's more likely there.
Hope that's a fun game. All right,
So do I for the rest of NFL Network.
Absolutely. Yes. Let's talk AFC East here. More likely to be the greater value. Bills winning margin. Or Browns, Jets, total points?
I'll go Browns, Jets, total points.
Do you think they score more than last night's game?
Well, that's 17.
I'm worried about this game. This game might be 9-6.
I'm just going to say that you always throw out records in division games. Perfect example was last night. I mean, Raiders showed up way, way more stout and buzzing around on defense than anybody thought. I don't care that the Broncos start slow. They just looked like they were sleepwalking. And the Raiders defense was definitely playing faster. And so why can't the Dolphins do that as well? I'll just say that that game will be closer than you think, and the Browns and the Jets will outpoint them. What else, Chris? Well, I mean, so the winning margin would be what, 20? If you think it's a blowout,
it may not.
And then
be
the
close.
Jets and the Browns don't combine for 20.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
maybe. More likely traded player to come up big for his new team. Sauce gets a pick, or Jacoby Myers gets a touchdown.
I'll go Jacoby Myers gets a touchdown. Certainly since Sauce Gardner, and whenever we talked to Pat Surtain before the Jets Broncos game, and he was lamenting the lack of action.
Oh.
You know, like, I think he feels like he gets dealt pocket aces every single hand and everybody else is just folding pre-flop, because that's the way corners who are shut down corners feel, that they don't get any action.
Yeah.
Because they're so good, everybody just declines to give them action. And
Drake London's going to get targets.
So Sauce, the fact that Sauce won't get a pick doesn't mean he's ineffective.
True.
And if Brian Thomas doesn't play, Jacoby Myers is going to get some targets, man.
Yeah.
So I'll go with Jacoby gets a touchdown. Chris, what else? A
few more here. Let's finish up. West Division, more likely to get three playoff teams, AFC or NFC?
Mm-hmm. I'm getting concerned that the Chargers don't have any of their tackles left.
And is Amarian Hampton ever coming back?
Yeah, week 13, he's been targeted for a while now.
And the Niners keep on chugging along, and that's the team that you feel will eventually fall off because they're not starting their starting quarterback.
And they guys keep getting hurt.
I'm
going to
go. I'll still go AFC. I'll go NFC West.
NFC.
But, I mean, boy, you're giving me something in week 10 to throw a dart at for 2 months from now. But,
I don't know. Just putting it out.
Don't hold me to it like you did my power rankings within 24 hours. What else, Chris?
Power rankings? You regret those?
No, I do not regret any of them because they're dumb to begin with.
Elite pass catchers more likely to have a higher receiving yards total.
Yeah.
JSN or Marvin and Trey McBride combined? Sneaky good game in Seattle.
I'll go Harrison Jr., Trey McBride combined. I'll do that. It'll be interesting to see if Rashid Shaheed cuts into, because even JSN going 130 yards, 140 yards, that's 70 each from these guys. You know what? I just talked myself into it. I'll go Jaxon Smith-Njigba. The Seattle.
He's on a pace for 2,000 yards.
I'll rely on the Legion of Zoom, and then the defense that's trying to become Legion of Boom 0.0, whatever it is, up there where the 0.0s were created, right up in Seattle. All those three versions, if you will.
That's right.
I will go. I'll screw it. Yeah, I'll go with.
Okay, good.
I'll go with JSN. Yeah, talk me into that.
All right, two more, and stay with me on these. You really listen to what I'm saying.
All right.
Okay. More likely team a month ago, you would have most laughed at me for suggesting they'd have 6 wins and in the playoffs after week 10.
Patriots and who?
Bears and Panthers.
Ah.
Could both get their 6th win, and they're in the playoffs right now after week 10.
So I need to... You're saying which one's more likely to win this weekend?
No, I'm saying which one would you have laughed the most if I said, hey, yeah, the Bears have 6 wins or in the playoffs when they were not
Bears.
Good.
I'd go with the Bears because I said the Panthers were the sleeper team coming into the season. So I would say that would be the one. So, yeah. You know, I like these to be more predictive than rearview mirror and predicting. But I'll go Panthers on that one.
Yeah, you're also in terms predicting of they're going to win this
Which
week,
one's going to win this weekend.
Yeah.
I think they win against New Orleans at home, and you know, both of them win. Maybe they both do have it.
Tet McMillan popped up today with a hammy.
What else you got for one
last
more?
Last one. More likely to be the higher number. Steelers fans at SoFi Sunday night, or the amount of dollars fined for guys double pumping after a touchdown.
Rico had $14,000 for the double pump, right? Mm-hmm. I'll go. There's going to be a lot of Steeler fans there Sunday night, buddy. I'm going. I'll be at the game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm going. Good one. I love that. This is a great split screen.
Guys are really doing that celebration now. They're not the only team that's done that. New England does it. I've seen other people get out there and they're kind of like
back, baby.
Pumping.
I love it.
Double pump.
Insubordinate and churlish.
Indeed. I'll go number of Steelers fans at SoFi. That's going to be something. I'll report on that when we on Monday's show.
Herbie might have to silent count.
Maybe so. My top five other games that I'm looking forward to seeing that's still to come. We'll hit on the Raiders when we come back. Your phone call is 844-204-RICH. Number to dial, Woody Harrelson, also still on our rundown on this fun Friday.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Hyundai Hope on Wheels is something I care deeply about, and passing it on to you, the information. It's all about pediatric cancer research and awareness. You might not know that over the last 27 years, every Hyundai sold has helped fund life-saving pediatric cancer research, 850 dealers nationwide together, raising money, over $277 million, supporting over 25,000 kids in their fight against cancer. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more. At Hyundai, hope isn't optional. It comes standard. Jason in Phoenix, you're on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Jason?
Jason. Hey, gentlemen. Thank you. Appreciate you. Before I start, I just want to say I played basketball at Mott Community College in Flint, Michigan.
Okay.
Draymond Green is from Saginaw, Michigan. If you know anything about Saginaw, everything Draymond says will make sense to you.
Okay.
With that out of the way. I want to talk a little bit about the Tigers, and then I want to say a little something about the Dodgers. First, I like Jeff, his, what's that word they say, acumen. Oh, my gosh, he's so smart, Jeff. But he is part of the media. The media likes trades. I get it. Detroit's not a small market team. Does he know who the Illich family is?
Does he
know what Little Caesars is? No, have you had a $5 hot and ready pizza?
No, I don't know. They've got the money.
Miguel Cabrera.
They have the money.
Max Scherzer, David Price, J.D. Martinez, Prince Fielder, Victor Martinez.
No, Jason, hold on. Jason.
Known for spending money.
Jason.
Ian Kinsler.
No, I got it. I hear you.
They got money.
I hear you, but you're not looking at the Tigers and say they're going to spend all that money on Scooble. And be able to spend all that money on other players on top of it to actually do battle with teams that take a $300 million contract and then another, or get three people to defer money into their dotage.
Okay, so that leads into my Dodgers, is what I want to talk about the Dodgers. First of all, I want to say, if AJ leaves Scooble in, we have possibly win the World Series if he didn't take him on the sixth inning. With that being said, that Selly for Shohei is exactly about what you just said. How he puts his hands in front of him and puts it to the side. His celebration is about that. It's about taking his contract.
Like him.
Let's just put that to the side. And then that leads right into bingo. Rich, you guessed it. They signed Roki Sasaki and Yamamoto with all that money that they didn't spend on him. That's the reason why they won the World Series. It wasn't because of Shohei. Mm-hmm. He helped get them there. But he didn't play great in the World Series, obviously.
Hey,
we all know that.
Listen,
it was those two guys that really won the World Series for him, and that was a direct result of his celebration of us putting all that money to the side and now let's just go and do this thing. I have a Dodgers hat and I have a Tigers hat sitting right on top of my little portable steamer right now. And I don't even want to wear my Dodgers hat. I'm embarrassed.
Listen, Jason, don't be embarrassed. My goodness. First of all, thank you for the call. Secondly, I believe... again, that celebration is—it's a Freddie Freeman dance that he was at a wedding, and they saw, and it was—he was like Elaine Bennis, and they all had fun, and they still are.
I like Jason. That's
like Jason's version better. Like, yeah.
It's not taking the money now and destroying it. By the way, I do like it. Listen, and I'm not just saying that for the ESPN 710 audience here in Los Angeles. I think a lot of us have DDS, Dodgers Derangement Syndrome. Okay, because it's within their rules, it's within the rules of Major League Baseball to do what they're doing in terms of deferring salary.
I wish my team did stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. And yes, they bought Shohei and Yamamoto is the World Series MVP, and Shohei is the MVP. And I love how people are like, hey, he didn't do anything in the World Series except reach base nine times before starting
nine
the fourth
times.
Game. Yeah, like, I mean, you know, We came on the air thinking they have to change the rules on how to intentionally walk people based because on what Ohtani did.
Yeah.
But then how explain to me Páez making the play he did, Rojas making the plays defensively in game six, and then in game seven coming up with the home run that he did. Will Smith is another guy, right, who's just not up there in terms of the nine-figure contracts. He might get one because the Dodgers can afford it. And that's the way baseball is. Just, I guess we have to face facts.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.